and sermon.
Connors is hanging in there. Corey Connors is hanging in there. He's not playing his way out of the tournament. There's a couple big names that might be. Rory McIlroy, yeah, chief among them. Like, it's not so far back that you couldn't overcome it if you got your game together, but, man, what did we say about McIlroy coming in today? It's Rintoul, it's Sermon, and the Masters is the backdrop for a question we've been asking you all morning about your bucket list and your sports bucket list and how it's changed and what it looks like now and how maybe your attitudes have changed after this pandemic. What do we say about McIlroy? Just don't throw the tournament away in the first two rounds. Just be around for the weekend so it's within reach. A guy who's looking for the career slam, still doesn't have the green jacket. Again, it's not done, but he's four over already.
Yeah, he's got one, two, three, four, five golfers that have a worse score than him right now. Scotty, he's in pretty good company with some pretty big names. I mean, Lee Westwood's down there. Sergio Garcia is at four over. He's won a green jacket before. Jason Day, I mean, I know he's not playing exactly the type of golf. Well, he's getting back there, actually. But four over. Danny Willett, of course, he's the one who won the green jacket when Jordan Spieth had that collapse. He's at four over par. So he has some company. He might think that the Masters is not on his bucket list anymore. But when it comes to, yeah, some big names, Dustin Johnson, I believe he's one over. Who else is? I mean, it's just some of the big names that we're used to seeing maybe atop the leaderboard are not doing so well. Brian Harman, he's looking really good. He's in the clubhouse right now at three under par. And anything in the red at this point, I think, is going to be a win on this day. Mackenzie Hughes, though, also through eight, one under. He's in the red, so that's good.
Yeah, and Connors is hanging in around even. He's one over right now, and he flirted. He was two under for a while and just had a poor start to the back. Just don't throw the tournament away on opening day. Just don't do that, Rory. Come on.
You know how much, like, the Masters event players or CBS for the weekend are just hoping, Scott, that some of these guys turn their games around. Brooks Koepka, another guy. He's three over. He's got a putt right now. I'm not sure if it's for par or for bogey or maybe birdie, but he's having a struggle. So you know that CBS is hoping that, I hope some of these guys turn it around. People will watch the Masters no matter what, Scotty. It's the Masters. You're going to be tuning in on Sunday. And yes, Koepka just went to four over par. He's had three bogeys in a row. So...
Well, maybe we'll play a clip from Michael Collins, who's a former caddy on the tour, works for ESPN now, and actually had a good clip about Bryson DeChambeau earlier today. Maybe we'll get into that this segment at some point, Karen. But one of the things he talked about, was just the fact that at Augusta, you know where to go, and golfers know where to go, but it gets into your head so much. It really does. And he's been there. He's been there on the course. And guys who are steely under other conditions, they get a little flummoxed when they get to Augusta National at times.
So maybe Bryson will be successful at Augusta. Maybe because he hits the ball not necessarily where most people will hit the ball when it comes to making their way around this course. You know, he's going to hit it longer than most people. So maybe he will have some success. That's to be determined, whether his style of golf can be successful at Augusta. But we'll have to see. Jordan Spieth just teeing off, by the way. He's even for his round, it looks like. Actually, I think this is his second shot of the day. So, you know, that's my who I'd be following right now. Me and my five friends, Scotty, would be following Jordan Spieth around the golf course. But you know what? It's just, it's great to see them out playing. It's great to see them in green conditions, and it's great to see fans being able to be back out there, because I think Sunday, that's going to make a big difference.
If the golf gods handed you a pass to either event, Masters or the Open Championship, which are you taking?
Depends where the Open is. If it's St. Andrews, then I'm going there.
That's the only one?
I probably couldn't list off some of the other golf courses that the Open Championship's played for.
Or Carnoustie.
There's Carnoustie, yeah. Yeah, you know what? There's something about St. Andrews. I have friends that have played it, and just being there and the lore of Scotland, there's something about St. Andrews.
Sure there is, and there's something about the Open Championship. And again, this goes back to the sports bucket list for a second. The reason I ask, Karen, is because when I was trying to put my top five together, which I don't know if I could laminate the list right now, because in and around four or five, I've probably got about six options that I'm still debating around. Those were the two in golf that came for me. When, do you end up going to the British Open? Do you end up going to the Masters? I think I'm choosing British Open. No disrespect to the Masters. I know the green jacket. I know all of that. Hallowed grounds. I think I'm taking the trip. And some of it's involved in where you get to go for me. So I think I'm taking the trip to England, going to the UK. But it's a tough call. It's a really tough call.
It is a really tough call because you've got, you know, the majesty and the pageantry of Augusta. But you've got the, I mean, where golf was created, basically. You know, when you go back to St. Andrews in Scotland. So I think it'd be hard for people to probably choose between the two. I would do probably with you, Scott, because I've never been to England and I've never been to the UK, and I would love to go over there. And also, too, you kind of know the conditions you're going to get every April at Augusta. You're not exactly sure what Scotland's going to bring you in July.
Here's the other part. Okay, here's the other part. If you're out there, you're watching golf all day, but, like, in and around Augusta, Georgia, there's not much there. Like,
no,
there really
it's
isn't much
nowhere.
There. You're going to England? You're hitting the pubs pretty solid after watching the Open Championship as well. Now, if the golf gods gave you that choice, that's the choice you would make. Speaking of the golf gods, I told you we'd hear from Michael Collins, former caddy on the PGA Tour, now working for ESPN. He did not like something Bryson DeChambeau did this week, which is why he thinks it might bite him. Have a listen.
The golf karma god kicked him in the teeth, and he messed up again. That's been his presser when he said, I got a new secret weapon. Like, you don't say that before you win. You say it after you win when it's like, hey, man, how did you win and play so well? Well, I got this new secret weapon. By saying in his presser on Tuesday, I got a new secret weapon, it's like when the villain in a movie starts telling the hero why he did what he did and how he's going to kill him. Like, I'm going to spend 12 minutes explaining it, right, because I'm spending 12 minutes telling you my evil plan and how I'm going to kill you. And now karma kicks you in the teeth and you end up being in jail. You're like, why did I waste all my time telling this dude what I was going to do? And now, so, and that's what it is with Bryson DeChambeau. And this place, the Masters, is where the saying, I believe, where the saying drive for show came about. It's drive for show, putt for dough. You hit it as far as you want to. But if you're in the trees or you ain't in the right spots around the green, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how you hit the driver.
That's a guy who's been on the course in a couple of different capacities. Once as a caddy, now he's working for ESPN as well. He gets it. Masters, a bucket list item for a lot of you. I didn't think this one would come in, but it did from an unsigned texter today at 650, 650. You can also find us at 960, 960. Watching an America's Cup race in New Zealand. That's a huge bucket list item for one of our listeners. Sailing.
That's curious. I mean, I don't know how much you get to view the entire event. I'm very questionable on that. I don't know. You know, I don't know how close the yachts or sailing boats, whatever you call them, are close to the shore so you can see it. So it'd be interesting. I mean, maybe down – it's impressive the speed that those boats can get up to and how they go through a course, Scotty. But, of course, we're seeing it from a helicopter view or a drone view or a boat beside it view. So it's a little different maybe from the stands. But maybe, again, this is one of those – you're in Melbourne, you know, or you're in Australia or New Zealand, wherever. It's the venue of seeing it. I'm sure it's a big party. Again.
Well, this is what I'm getting to. We've had so many people talk about F1, and I know we've got dedicated F1 fans, but it's just the surrounding atmosphere you're looking for at an F1 event. Like, they're going by. You're watching the screen as much as you're watching anything else, and hey, you might know the drivers. You might be rooting for Lewis Hamilton. I have no idea. But it's more about everything else going on around there. Like, the New Zealand event, going to watch America's Cup, like, hey, Catalina Wine Mixer, let's go have a good time, all right?
So we've had this one text in quite a bit, Scott, and it's an event where I'd probably want to see at least once in my life. It's not like a bucket list, but it's like, okay, if I had the chance to go to, I wouldn't turn tickets down to it. The Waste Management Open in Phoenix. And we all know the party hole, right? I believe that's a 16th hole.
It is.
And the 16th hole at the Waste Management Open. I don't know if you've been, but Jeff in Red Deer has been, and he recommends it. He says he's been three times, and it's must-see. Again, it's the party atmosphere, right? You get to be rowdy at a golf course, finally. You know, you don't have to be all proper and be quiet while the golfers are hitting their shots. Yeah, you do. But it's still, it's a different type of event, that Waste Management Open.
Oh, it's a different type of event, all right. I haven't been, but I happened to attend the Super Bowl in Phoenix when the waste management was going on the exact same weekend, and just seeing some of the riffraff is the wrong word, but just some of the spillover because some of the parties cross ways. Yeah, it's a different event. It can be a good time, but it's a certain type of good time. You know who we haven't asked? We have not asked producer Jamie, who helped us set up the show today. He is a big part of this. Jamie, we have not asked you as to this point your sports bucket list. What is on it for you?
Yeah, so a lot of them, unsurprisingly, have come in some capacity already. You know, the Monaco Grand Prix is definitely there for me. But I will say, and there's a lot of sporting events that fall into this category, I think the Grand Prix is the ultimate example, or the Monaco Grand Prix is the ultimate example of one. If you're going to go, it pretty much, you need it to be in the VIP capacity, right?
Yeah.
Because it's all about the glitz, the glamour, what parties are you getting into, where are you watching it, right? So it's kind of on my bucket list, but with an asterisk. If I ever somehow had the funds or the connections to make that happen, it would be up there. Another one that I've seen come in just recently a couple times is the Summer Olympics. And again, I don't know if that's bending the rules because it's so many events in one, but I just think the chance to go to a world city like that, spend an extended amount of time, go see so many different events, that's high on my list. And one that I don't think I have seen come in at all, which I'm a little surprised, is a big time hyped boxing title fight. And, you know, you just think at a casino in Vegas, again, the glitz, the atmosphere, the glamour. I know boxing has lost a little bit of its luster here recently, but I still think that event would just be incredible.
Well, yeah, it would be, but you'd have to get into a hot tub time machine to go to it, Jamie, because as you said, boxing has lost its luster. Like, yes, there are good fights, but they just don't have the same hype around them that they used to.
Yeah, but they still, like, I think you look at those, the handful of fights every year, and the atmosphere is still there. I'm not saying it's not what it once was, but it would still very much be worth going to.
Yeah, like if you could see like a Triple G and Canelo type fight, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That would be the one I guess you would see. It's funny because Robin Airdrie agrees with you at the Olympics. He says men's 100 meter final at the Olympics. The moment when the set call comes and 50,000 fans go silent has to be seen in person. And you get to see the world's fastest man alive as well.
I would love to see that. Yeah, that would be fantastic to see. And that's the event of the Summer Olympics, with all due respect to all the other ones. Like, that's the one that everybody wants to be a part of and everybody wants to be there for. The only thing I would counter Jamie's argument about boxing with, like, if we put a sub poll question out to our listeners, would, if I give you tickets to either a big boxing match or a big UFC match, which is coming out on top right now?
UFC, no doubt about it. But if this is my list, Scotty, it's up to me.
It absolutely is. I'm just saying, you're surprised it's not come in. I'm actually more surprised that somebody hasn't said a title fight for UFC stacked card. I'm surprised that hasn't come in as opposed to boxing.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good, like, and listen, I would enjoy that as well. I'm a bit more of a boxing fan, but I am surprised that no one has said MMA or UFC yet.
So am I. Like, I mean, coming up again, you're going to have, I know this is not the cachet it used to have, and we saw what happened when they fought in the second round, but like Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier are fighting again. And I just know for a third time. And, you know, Conor McGregor has just that allure. I think it'd be pretty impressive to be, you know, in Vegas at MGM or wherever they plan to hold this fight, and just to see McGregor do his stupid little strut.
So you're a big fan.
Into the ring. Oh, I bet against him, and I usually win, at least lately. But to see that would be pretty impressive. Jamie, I wanted to touch on something you did say, because you said with Monaco, and you have to do that, say, if you won the Lotto Max. Like, okay, win the Lotto Max, I'll do Monaco right. This is one of the reasons, and I know the three of us have kind of talked about this a little bit. This is one of the reasons why I actually don't have the Super Bowl is even on my bucket list. It'd be cool to see, but one, NFL games take so long in person anyways. You add the Super Bowl capacity of it. This game is going to be, I mean, this is like you're in the stadium for probably 5-6 hours. And the fact that you have the cash to get into certain places or the celebrity to get in certain places, it's just not going to be what you expect it to be.
Well, and the Super Bowl is not exactly known for the crazy atmosphere in the building, right? That's what a lot of these events that we're talking about are known for, is the atmosphere from the fans. Yes, also the surrounding events, which the Super Bowl has, of course, but we all know what the Super Bowl is. It's in large part a corporate crowd and a lot of neutral fans as well. You do get the diehards traveling with their team, but it's not, you know, a crazy atmosphere like you get at other events. So I agree with you, Karen. I mean, it's one thing if you have all of the right hookups and connections for Super Bowl weekend, but the game itself is almost beside the point there.
Dan texts in saying the world's strongest man competition would be on Rick Ball's list. Yeah, it would be. And the next time we get Baller on, we'll ask him about it because that is one of his favorite things to watch on television. I got you to watch a little bit last week,
oh,
Karen.
Oh, Scotty. Okay, so, you know, our first week on the show, first day on the show, we had Rick Ball on last Monday. And you guys are talking about two people that I have no idea even who you're talking about. And then find out later it's the world's strongest man and Rick Ball's fascination with this. Well, Friday night, guess what I end up doing on TV? I end up watching the world's strongest man on TV because you've got guys that are carrying three motorbikes on, I guess, a barbell over their shoulders and they have to walk like, I don't know, 100 yards, not even that far. But still, it's just like, this is compelling stuff. They have to put just ball, these big, massive cement balls up on these pedestals. And for some reason, that is appealing.
This is what I'm talking about. There's something about it, isn't there? It's the absurdity of the event. It's the absurdity of the event. Like, you could have somebody go in and show that they had great squat strength by actually just squatting in a gym. But why do that when you could have somebody put three motorbikes on some type of beam on each side and then have somebody walk with them down the street? Like, the spectacle of it's fantastic.
Because it just makes no sense. Like, it's like, and I guess, Scotty, because of the fact it is, like you've pointed out before, it's just these events probably came out of just a bunch of guys drinking some beers, trying to see what else they could do to up one another. And all of a sudden, you've got three motorbikes on your shoulders. I don't know.
Someone else just texted in Soccer World Cup final. We mentioned that. Oh, and again, with something like the World Cup for me, I do want to go abroad. I know it's coming to North America. I'm going to try to attend games. World Cup final would be great. There is a little bit of it, like Jamie said, that those tickets are purchased in advance. You don't know which teams are going to be there. So neutral crowd, not completely, but it's a little bit muted compared to what you would actually want, which is, okay, we know there are these two rival teams in one of the groups at the World Cup, and I can go to that game.
Yep.
You know, like, it's great to be at the biggest game of them all, but you get a rivalry game mixed in there. And it takes it to the next level. It's why when I eventually go to an NCAA football game, which I haven't been to for a variety of reasons, I want to go to a rivalry game. I want to go to a rivalry game. Whether that is something as you know, sometimes benign as the Apple Cup, but it's not if you're there. Like Washington State, like that's a great rivalry game. Civil War down in Oregon between the Ducks and the Beavers. Yeah, I want to go to something like that because it means so much to those teams and you're in a hostile environment, all of those different things.
Yeah, like that's why I pointed out, like, you're in Death Valley and you get LSU, Alabama. Like, I think that would be absolutely incredible. I'd probably have to cheer for LSU at the time because I don't think I can cheer for Bama. And you're in LSU and you don't probably... It's one of those places too, Scott, where you think of these rivalry games, you kind of don't want to be on the other side of it. You want to be on the home side. Just pick them because you don't want to be the brunt of the opposing fans or the home fans' fury. There's a lot of bucket lists coming in for cricket. And this is a surprising one to me, but I guess it would depend for me. It'd be cool to see it, say, like in the West Indies, as Scoobs texts in to the inbox 960-960. The only thing I would say about that, it'd be cool to see live, but I would not want one of those test events that goes like, do I have to go to all 5 days?
Well, you
got
to have some stamina. Like, you're going to have to train for a while because if you're going to be enjoying yourself, and I think we all know what I'm talking about while you're watching the sporting event, like, you need some stamina with a cricket match. Like, it's going to take a long time.
I will suggest you might need some stamina with some of these other events, too, because, you know, Monaco. where else are you going? The waste management. There's going to be a lot of stamina that's needed at a lot of these events.
Or as many of our listeners have called it this morning, the wasted management. Open down in Phoenix. Bucket list, New Zealand v. Ireland at a World Cup, said somebody. Again, you got to hope that matchup actually transpires, but I understand. You're going to pick your teams while we're dreaming. Why not? Steve from Calgary says any major tennis final. Yeah. There are some that rank above others, I think, for most of us. I would love to go to Australia, but of the four slam events, I'd probably rank that fourth. Not in terms of destination, but... as far as, like, if I go to Roland Garros or if I could go to Wimbledon or the frenzy that is the U.S. Open in Flushing, I'm probably taking that over the Australian Open.
There's the one that I wouldn't want to go to. I'm not going to the French. It's not, you know, unless I get free tickets and they're sending me for media purposes or whatever. That's just, I have no appeal. Clay court tennis, even if it's Rafael Nadal in the final, the appeal's not there. Plus, it always looks like it's crappy weather in Paris at the time, in late May. So there's that. The Aussie Open, Scott.
I'm sorry, you just turned down a trip to Paris to see the French Open. That's what I just heard.
I've been there, done that. Not the French Open, but Paris. But no, I wouldn't turn it down, but it wouldn't be, it'd be fourth on my list. Aussie Open, I think it comes at a time of year, Scott, in this country where yeah. You want to get out of winter and there's it's that. Summer in Australia and it's the first major of the year and there's, you know, it's the first time these players are playing in a long time. So there's the weather factor. Wimbledon is Wimbledon, you know, it's strawberries and cream. It's dressing in your white. That's the more pomp and circumstance one. But the U.S. Open, you get someone like, say, there's really not any big American tennis players right now. I guess John Isner is the biggest. But at the time, maybe you get a James Blake or you get a Pete Sampras or you get someone of that ilk and you've got that nighttime crowd and it's past midnight and it's a, you know, in the fifth set and this match has been going on for 4 hours. Like, that to me sounds amazing.
18, 19 months ago, how good would it have been to be there for Bianca over Serena? Basically home court advantage for her with that raucous crowd, American star, greatest of all time. And the Canadian takes her down in that. How great would that have been?
Oh, that'd be incredible. Actually, one of our listeners texted in and says, I don't think he saw the final match, but went to the U.S. Open the year that Nadal and Bianca played and watched them play though on different courts. Like, that would have been super cool to see. Just an update. Corey Connors is in the clubhouse 1 over for his round 73. Not too shabby staying with it, Scotty, considering what some of these golfers are doing on the golf course right now.
Attaboy, waving that Canadian flag down at Augusta. We'll keep you up to speed as to what is happening there. We didn't even get into this great Ron Rivera clip and we'll have to do that a little later in the program because coming up next, we are going to talk about events we want to see this year. And we didn't get to see them last year. How confident is Dave Dickinson that CFL football will take place in 2021? We'll ask him that and much more next on Rentoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rentoul and Sermon.
We had the early tweet from Sandy B, who happens to be Sandy Beveridge, former CFLer Sandy Beveridge, UBC grad Sandy Beveridge, a former teammate of mine. He was the guy early that you read his tweet, Karen, saying, you know what, after the year that's been, I just will take the Grey Cup in Hamilton, where he happens to live now. He's a former Ticat, so he said, I'll just take that. Like, if we can get that game this year, I don't need to travel anywhere. Put that on my bucket list for 2021. And I'm sure our next guest agrees. I'm sure he'd like to be a part of it with his Calgary Stampeders. It's Rentoul, it's Sermon, and we are joined by former CFL quarterback, former NFL quarterback, and now the head coach of the Calgary Stampeders. Dave Dickinson joins us here today. Dave, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. It's been a while.
It has. How are you? How's the family?
Oh, everybody, you know, we're not going to say we're great, but we're hanging in there. We've got some crazy weather today out in Calgary. It's like spring shows up and you think everything's back and then we're supposed to get snow today. So that's just what it is around here. But I'm sure you guys are nice and green and the golf clubs are shined up and hopefully you're enjoying it.
Yeah, it's pretty good here right now. I had some rain yesterday, but it's all good again. Just softening up those greens so we can dial it in there nice and tight. Like, who are we kidding? If we're happy if we landed on the green. Do you have a bucket list item, Dave, before we talk a little CFL football here? As I know you're a big sports guy. I know you watch a little bit of everything. Do you have a bucket list item on your sports list?
Well, I hit my bucket list item when I turned 40. My wife and sent me and my college roommate to the Masters, and I always wanted to go. My grandpa was a big golf nut, and he kind of started my brother and I into golf when we were 12 or 13, and she surprised me, and it was awesome, to be honest. It was probably better than you can expect, and everyone says how great it is, and it's true. It's all about the golf, though, so you better be a golf fan. But I actually wouldn't mind. I enjoy NBA games. like my sons have kind of liking some basketball. And when we went to the College Hall of Fame, we ended up picking up a Hawks game. And I hadn't seen much NBA, and I loved it. So, you know, NCAA, you know, something in the bracket would be fun. I would like to watch some basketball. I feel like I watch enough football. So if I don't catch a Super Bowl, I'm going to be okay with that. But anyway, so those would be some things I'd like to watch.
Yeah, and I know you'd like to watch some CFL football. We've had people texting us today wanting some CFL football this year, Dave, as we make the turn into what you do for a living. How confident are you that we're going to see CFL football this season?
I'm confident. I am. I feel like there's been some people that are way higher up the ladder on decision-making than me saying they're going to play this year. I just want those guys to come out and tell us when. So that's the big question. I really do feel we're going, and I'm comfortable with whatever they decide. We are just such scheduled people. We like to know what's in the future. We want to, you know, try to get ourselves locked in and lined up for something that is, I guess, going to happen. And this darn pandemic, there's just really everything so cloudy out there. Schedules are very tough to decipher. So I really feel like, Scotty, it's going to go. And I think fairly soon, to be honest. But that's just me having a gut feeling on that.
Dave, I mean, it has been a year and a half since we've seen CFL football. Coming up, I guess, training camp in May would be 2 years now since a training camp happened. Have you heard, like, how difficult has this been for your players this past, I guess, year and a half?
Good question. And by the way, Karen, I'm glad Scotty finally got someone a little softer voice in the studio. So appreciate that. No, to be honest, it's been terrible on them. And you know, I've been a player for many years, and I actually sometimes forget that I don't have the player hat on. I really do feel like I know that other side as good as lots of people. But see, we just feel like you said, they're committed to us. And yet, you know, there's all sorts of things up in the air, salaries, a lot of them. Some of the best guys got signing bonuses and had guaranteed money here and there, but a lot of them, unfortunately, have just been trying to find a way to support themselves and their family and to get to the next season. And, you know, like the guys, even right now, they have jobs, they have rent, and they just need to know when is it time to go to our bosses and say, hey, I'll see you in a year. I'm going to Canada to play some ball. That's the questions that you feel for the players on. So as soon as we can get a schedule and as soon as we feel like it's a green light, I do feel more confident that I can talk to the players and say, kind of let's go. But until then, I've been kind of telling them, yep, we're thinking it's still in May. Get your body right, get you mentally right. But I wouldn't necessarily retire from that job that's giving you food on your table.
Yeah, I'm guessing there has to be some serious conversations with some players, especially, you know, with their families about, you know, especially maybe some later in their careers. Is it time to possibly, you know, just continue with that stable career that they may have had to have in that during the coronavirus?
True. And I mean, I am of the opinion, and I would go on record as saying that, you know, most of the time, real work and real jobs will be there for you, whereas football is just such a finite small window. I would take it as far as it can take me, and I did. I mean, I wasn't going to, you know, basically someone else is going to have to tell me when to stop. And I kind of feel like football players are football players, that that's what they want to do. But you're right, especially people that know nothing about Canada and the CFL. I mean, say what you want. Sometimes in the U.S. you get stuck in your own little world. You're like, Canada, where's that? And once they come here and they understand what our league's about and our fan support and how much we love our game, I think a lot of them like to stay. But it's tougher when these guys haven't been here and you're trying to sell our league and our game, and yet there really hasn't been a game now, like you said, in almost 2 years. So definitely a challenge for us coaches.
Dave Dickinson, head coach of the Calgary Stampeders, joining us here today on Rintoul and Sermon. And it's kind of crazy how it's flipped, isn't it, Dave? A year ago, we're talking about this, and over the last number of months, can they get a CFL season up and running? Well, you got to bring in so many Americans, and with the way things are going down there, how's that going to happen with our border? It's amazing how it's flipped, because a lot of the players that would be coming to Canada are probably going to be vaccinated by before those who live here. And I imagine your mind has wandered with that possibility that it might actually be easier, depending on what happens with our border restrictions, to get players in now than it would have been 6, 7, 8 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, and I read April 19th, every single state in the U.S. is open to anybody can get a vaccine. And I'm from Montana, and everybody, I could drive down and get one myself if I could just get back without a 14-day quarantine. And trust me, it's crossed my mind. I think the players, for the most part, will have an opportunity to be vaccinated. You know, obviously, there's always what's up with the PA, and, you know, I'm not telling anyone that they need to or have to. All I can do is let them make an informed decision, and hopefully, though, it helps us for the CFL and down the road for also no work stoppages. You know, that's the worst thing to do is if we got going and then we had massive break like the Canucks. I mean, that's just all the momentum of everything you do. You know, it's just the air goes out of the balloon. So if we're vaccinated and maybe we can be a little bit less stringent on certain things, you know, I don't know what to treat it like, Scotty. I really don't. I don't know. I don't want to get involved in the politics of it, but at some point, you know, can we get back to the new normal? And is the new normal treated it like the flu? I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see. But certainly hope, you know, once we decide to open those borders and people come in, hope the majority of us in Canada are also vaccinated and we can get back to enjoying sport for what it is, a release, you know, a place to go and gather with your friends and celebrate some good Canadian football. And that's what I'm hoping it'll happen.
Well, we're all hoping that's going to happen at some point in the next few months. But then there's the issue of, can you congregate? Can you do that in every single province? I know you don't have those answers, Dave, but as you watched what happened last season unfold, and unfortunately there wasn't one, and we look ahead to this year, can we go without fans in the CFL financially for any length of time on the schedule?
Yeah. Not really, unfortunately, a question I can answer. I don't know the details. But I'm going to tell you this, Scotty. I'm more than willing to do whatever they tell me to do to play. So I don't really care if we need to take a little cut. You know, let's be honest. I want to play so bad, and I just think we need it as a country, but also Calgary Stampeders. I live in this city. I feel like we need something to kind of get things going. So whatever they tell me is needed to be done as an organization, we're going to do it to the best of our ability, and we're going to get out there on the field and do what we do best, which is win games.
And depending on who you listen to and what reports you read, that might involve some type of potential merger. Maybe not right away, but with the XFL at some point. Dave, what's been your reaction to all of that talk and the potential of an XFL merger? Are you wary of it? Are you excited about it? Where do you stand?
I'm not really thinking about it. I know that's what you might say, why, but there's other things on the horizon that are way closer for me, at least. And like I told you, I'll do whatever they tell me is best to keep this thing rolling. And so for me, that means getting focused on 2021 CFL season and understanding this, our team here, like if when we show up on the sideline, I'll be darn, I don't think people will know 75% of our team. They'll look at the name on the back of the jersey and who's that? And I really feel like we've went through a bit of a rebuild without any games actually prove that what we're doing is right. But our roster has had such turnover. We end up watching a lot of the classics, you know, like, so I watch a lot of the highlights. I try not to watch the Grey Cup games where we lose, but I end up seeing games like from 2018 and I don't see any of our team playing anymore. It's crazy how many people have changed. So I kind of feel like this year is more going to be exciting for us. We're in a new, for me, and kind of a new frontier. Expectations are still high, but do these guys really know what Calgary Stampeder football is about? And we're going to have to do a great job to coach them. As far as the other stuff, I just feel like it's too far on the horizon for me to really get involved with it. And plus, I have zero say. So I'm just going to focus on 2021. And like I said, I really do believe we'll be playing sooner rather than later, and I'm excited about that.
One thing you do having come up, Dave, is the CFL draft. Of course, I believe that's in May. And last year was obviously difficult, still had the draft, but there was no combine. I'm guessing this year is exactly the same. So how has it been trying to get kind of like recruiting tools, shall we say, and film on these guys to see what you have, you know, the potential of drafting this year?
Yeah, honestly, it's been difficult. I'm not going to say I'm a scouting guru. I enjoyed seeing guys in person, though. I think G-Roy had an article, and he said how much things are different in person than off of film. You know, we've tried a global initiative, and I feel like it just everything has kind of worked against it at this stage. So we've got that draft on the 15th, and same thing. It's hard to draft a guy you've never seen. I mean, we've had some horror stories where we draft a guy, and he shows up, and he's like 3-4 inches shorter than we thought, and not nearly the guy. Now his film is the same, but you know, there's doesn't seem sometimes, you know, you need certain attributes, certain physical tools to excel at a professional level. And sometimes it certainly is difficult when you haven't seen him in person, but we're going to make the best of it. I, the one thing on the Canadian draft that disappointed me was how many of the young athletes opted out. I felt like with the rules that we have, that we could send them back to school. I was really disappointed that they didn't want to put themselves out there, see where they get drafted and come to a camp and make themselves better. And then if it didn't work out, they still could go back to school. And that was the part for me that I was surprised. I thought with our rules, more Canadian kids would actually put themselves out there. But there are still, I mean, some good players, just not as many of them this draft. And that's, I guess, represented in the lack of only going 6 rounds versus 8. So we have to be sharp. We need some reinforcements. We do have 2 draft classes coming in, though, which the competition will be there. But with the rules that the Canadian give us that we can actually send guys back to school, I feel confident the guys that are pro-ready will stay, and the rest of the guys hopefully go back to their programs and have great years.
So you're going to be disappointed when I send you Cooper Kupp's college tape and I show up.
Yes, I would. You know, I'd give you the benefit of the doubt. You guys, yes, I'd give you the benefit of the doubt. I'd let you go one-on-one with our DB, Scotty, and see how you do.
Yeah, I think I know how I'd do. That's Dave Dickinson, head coach of the Stampeders, joining us here on Rintoul and Sermon. You know, Dave, I know you've been following the talk with the XFL and CFL, and we did a lot of it on this show. And in fact, the last time I had you on this program, we were talking about the Canadian Football League and what needs to be on the table and what's sacred to the game. I think there's 2 parts to this conversation that I've noticed over the past month since this has become a topic. One is that, what's sacred to the game? How much have you thought about that, the CFL itself, and in any future world where things could change, like, what can't change for you? What needs to be there for it to be considered CFL football?
I don't, you know, I just don't feel confident that it's, you know, should be up to me. You know, I like a lot of things about the CFL game, but I, you know, I think we can put an exciting version of a product on a field if we tweak some rules. And I don't want to get into the ratio, or I don't want to get into 3 down, 4 down, yard off, yard off, yard on. But I do think some of the things that are the most exciting about our game is our unlimited motion. I would be disappointed if we weren't able to keep that. I think obviously it makes it a little tougher on defenses, but it gives the creativity of an offensive coordinator, and for fans, you can do things that you normally can't do. And I also like the return game. I like the idea of just keeping the halo and giving guys a chance to make plays. Probably the one thing that I have no allegiance to is the single point, the rouge. I don't really like rewarding someone a point when they fail. So those would be some big things for me. Other than that, you know, I'm willing to hear some talk. And you know what I want? You know, engage people and be open to things. That's the key, is don't be stuck. You know, just put your feet in the sand and don't move. You know, decide what you think is good, and people in our game, we do it every year, by the way. We do it every year. We try to make it better with rules changes. I am not, Scott, I am not in favor of a 48-42 game. I'm going to go on record for many times. I love a 27-24 game. I like the defense stopping the offense, you know, 45% of the time. I think that's what makes a back-and-forth game exciting to me. I do not need to see the rules geared for just the offense. I think that, to to me, I mean, just it doesn't do anything for me. I mean, if you can't stop anybody, it's who has the ball last. That does nothing for me as a fan. I might be in the minority, though. I really might be. Maybe people just love seeing touchdown catches. Well, I want an even playing field. I want the quarterback to have to earn his living. That means you're going to get hit. I really think those are vital for our game.
I'm with you to a certain extent. I might bump that up to 31-28, but we're kind of in the same ballpark with that, Dave. So the good part of this conversation for me, and I was actually overwhelmed doing the show when all of this hit and the XFL topic came up. What I found is that whether people agreed on the three downs or the ratio or what needed to change or a merger or not, there's so much passion for football in this country, and that mm-hmm. came through in spades. And really what it comes down to is, can we tap into that some way? Because people are interested. Did you find the same thing?
For sure. In fact, I really believe the CFL athlete is the most accessible athlete in all of sports. And I feel like people, if we can just relate to them and get to know them, and we need to come down a little smaller generation. We got to get into the younger groups. You know, there's been a lot of buzz about gambling, and trust me, I do it, so I understand it. But I think the number one thing is put a good product on the field and make it fun. I definitely think we're in the entertainment business. I don't think as coaches, if you're turning down interviews or you're not allowing your other guys to be themselves, your players to be themselves and to have personality, I think we're doing our league a disservice. And that's where I think CFL has always been, a league that hopefully, Scott, you guys have access to the people you want to talk to. There's tons of great stories. There's just such a melting pot of who we are as a league and as a country. And I think football is a great sport. I think it's best, but I mean, I know many people will say I'm biased, but that's just true. But there's just so many things going on, and there's no one guy can take over a game either. Just because you have one great player doesn't mean anything in football. You need more. And it happens every year where the tightest team and the group that is locked in as a group of however it is, 11, 12 on the field at one time, that team wins. And it's exciting. And there's parity too. Boy, there's lots of teams that think they got a chance every year. So as long as we keep getting that fan support and we do our job, I just think it will succeed.
I covered the sidelines for the BC Lions the past two seasons, Dave. This is not on my bucket list, but it would mean the world is back to normal and we're back at McMahon Stadium. And I would just like to be back in the day where I can get scared when you have that horse run up and down the sidelines when Calgary scores a touchdown. Because, again, it just means the world's kind of back to normal.
Yeah, well, we put that horse on the visitor sideline for a reason.
Right? I know. Scotty and I think have had both experiences with it, and it's not fun.
It's way better than that wagon with that noise in Regina, you know, that goes around. I mean, the horse tops it, no doubt.
I'm surprised, by the way, when we asked you off the top of the show, you didn't try to sell your in-state rivalry in Montana, the Brawl of the Wild. How come you didn't try to get our listeners saying, that's the event you got to go to, Cat Grizz, let's go?
Hey, I would highly suggest, and you live in BC, but if you want a great college atmosphere, go to Missoula, Montana, and watch a football game there. Now, listen, they're kind of doing a hybrid spring season. They're only playing two games. They're playing Mike Riley's alma mater this weekend, Central Washington. Last time the Grizz had played them, Mike was actually quarterbacking for Central Washington, and So they will be a game. But that is an amazing stadium, amazing setup. It's 25,000 strong. People are crazy. Tony Romo's been on been on record as saying it's the loudest stadium he's ever been to. Now, he might have been drinking a few there, but it is a great atmosphere and certainly one of those things where I believe any person that's looking for just that college feel and tailgating, go down there, take a piece of it, and bring some of it back to Canada when you come watch our games.
Dave, great stuff as always. Thank you for being accessible, for having this conversation with us today, and I hope you're right. I hope we see football on the field sooner rather than later, and that we can get a few fans in the stands, because it means we're doing a lot better health-wise as a country, too.
Yeah, and all the best to you guys, and appreciate you reaching out to us over on the other side of the mountains.
Absolutely. That is Dave Dickinson, and this show obviously broadcast across Western Canada. He's always been accessible for the program. Mm-hmm. He is always trying to make time. I agree with him in terms of accessibility, Karen. You and I, we do have a bias. We do have a love for the CFL, and that's not to say that both of us don't see things that could change, should be open to change, at least have a conversation about change. The thing that has bled through to me this entire time, we weren't doing the show when this first hit, the XFL, CFL thing. People love football. So how can we tap into that more? Because it's a perception issue as much as anything else.
Absolutely. And he said, you know, the accessibility, and that's maybe been one of the criticisms with the league, is because there's been so much player turnover and you kind of don't know year in, year out, except maybe, you know, the quarterback who is on your football team. So I do think, and the CFL, and even, you know, dealing with the BC Lions in Vancouver, whenever you ask for anybody's squad, they're going to make them available to you because they want, you know, you to know who's on their team and who you can support and go out and watch these football games. So I will give the CFL major props for that. They are very accessible to the media here as well. Like I said, Scotty, I know you and I have both been on the sidelines. I don't know if you've had the luxury of having, maybe run over by the nice little, Calgary horse that they have, stallion that runs by you. It's not fun.
Yeah, Quick Six has never run me over. We've never had that type of going across the middle interaction. I can tell you that. And it gets a lot safer when you go up to the booth, I can tell you.
Yeah, exactly. When I was on the sidelines that first time, I was like, the security guard actually had to pull me forward to be closer to the benches so I didn't get run over. And I thought, oh my God, this is Calgary. They're probably going to put up a ton of points. I'm going to have to endure this multiple times in the game.
Well, I just hope we get back to that sooner rather than later. CFL football, getting to these bucket lists event. Dave Dickinson weighed in. His was the Masters. Maybe it's that for you. Maybe it's something else. We'll dive back into some of your stories on the other side. And we will also start to turn our sights ahead to NHL action tonight. Canadian teams involved once again. That's bad news for one in particular, and we'll tell you who on the other side. It's Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
We're still getting some great advice from many of you, a lot of you submitting your texts or your tweets. 960, 960, 650, 650. Those are your text donations here with Rintoul and Sermon. Sports bucket list. We use the Masters as a backdrop for it, and boy, is it taking off here today. We'll continue that through this last hour. We've also had some texts, Karen, about hockey, and understandably so. In the last 24 hours, we've seen some deals go down. The one between the Devils and the Islanders, the most significant, with Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac heading to the New York Islanders. What Chicago did today with Florida was more of a cap-saving move by the Florida Panthers and trying to free up some room. So that's great for those of you who want to see some movement, because it means Florida's going to make another move. And it also, when these things happen, Karen, puts a little more pressure on teams in and around those in the standings to kind of keep up with the Joneses, if you will.
Yeah, like, I wonder what there is out there. I'm not going to begin to say I'm an expert on Carolina hockey or Tampa Bay hockey, but I wonder what there is out there that those two teams think they could bolster. I mean, we saw what Tampa, they basically brought back their entire team from last year. I guess, you know what? I guess Nikita Kucherov is going to be Tampa Bay's, you know, acquisition, but playoff acquisition. So maybe Tampa Bay doesn't really have to do any moves. Carolina, of course, you know, maybe there is some question marks at their goaltending, but they've won two in a row. Peter Mrazek looks pretty good since he's come back. But it could, like you said, put some pressure on Carolina, Tampa Bay to stand pat with Florida, because right now Florida's leading that division.
They are, and let's see what they do, and let's see if they go and try to find a suitable replacement. Not that you're going to get everything, but do they try to replace that Aaron Ekblad spot in the lineup? The more pressure to me comes in that East Division. That is where the pressure comes. The move that the Islanders made, they're already really good. They already went to the Eastern Conference Final last year, and they added some scoring. They added Palmieri. They added some experience with Travis Zajac a little further down the lineup. Not a guy you even have to play every single game, but a veteran you can plug in there, a guy who's been through those playoff battles before. What do you do if you're Boston? What do you do if you're Pittsburgh? What do you do if you're Washington? Those are the three teams occupying playoff spots in that division right now. Surprisingly, the Bruins have the most tenuous hold on a playoff position out of any of those four teams. Boston can't score. There's an obvious need there. There are some that think the Bruins want to add on the back end as well. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh's always active, and even though it's under new management with Ron Hextall, Brian Burke over top of him, those are guys who are a little bit aggressive. Those are guys who want to get some depth. And then there's Washington. Haven't been back anywhere near the promised land since Ovi got his cup. Peter Laviolette's there, first year on the job. There's a guy who knows how to take teams to the Stanley Cup final. How much pressure gets deployed in that division as a result of what the Islanders did?
Yeah, you tend to see that Peter Laviolette bump, don't you, when he joins a hockey team. It seems that Washington's got that. I'm very curious to see if the Pittsburgh Penguins will do anything. Well, actually, Pittsburgh and Boston, but Pittsburgh in general. Again, they've lost two in a row, but they've been playing a lot better. Sidney Crosby on that top line with Gensel and Brandon Rust. Surprisingly, Brandon Rust and Jake Gensel, basically the only two Pittsburgh Penguins to not get injured this season. Here's the thing. They're going to get Evgeny Malkin back. So again, maybe they're trade deadline acquisition or late season acquisition is just somebody on their roster. That could be it. It's that Boston Bruins team, Scotty, because for so long, they have been able to keep that core together. The core is aging, but the core is still pretty good. Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, who am I missing there?
Pasternak.
That's who I'm missing.
I mean, he hasn't been there the whole time, but, you know, Krejci's been there from back in the day, winning the Stanley Cup, and I know he's a little further down the lineup now, but the likes of those.
But so it'd be interesting to see, because is this the kind of maybe a last push that they can make with this core? Is there one more year in it? It depends where the management gauges this core and what they think they can do. I actually saw a funny tweet out there today that said, Boston could use Zdeno Chara right about now.
Well, it's funny you say that, because as you are going through the Boston Bruins and you're thinking about potential playoff matchups, like if the playoffs were to start today, that's what it would be. It would be Chara versus the Bruins. And I think no matter what side of that you're on, and for most people listening, you're probably on one side as opposed to the other, you're going to want to watch that. You're going to want to watch how Big Z goes against his former team, because when things get physical, he likes to ramp things up, even at his age where he's at right now, and how does he do that against his former teammates? What does that look like? A series involving Tom Wilson and Brad Marchand, two of the most agitating players in the National Hockey League for different reasons. I think there's a lot of people that would sign up to watch that series.
Absolutely. The two actually play tonight as well, so there's a little bit of a preview for you. I would definitely, honestly, when you look at the way most of the NHL standings are right now, like, you kind of almost want the playoffs to end the way they are, because, yeah, I would love to see Washington-Boston. Sydney go up against that Islanders crew in the way that Barry Trotz likes to deploy his lineup. You know, maybe not so much the Central when it comes to sexy, you know, matchups, but Tampa Bay-Carolina. I mean, the two of those teams are going to have to go at it right now to possibly play Florida. Colorado versus Arizona. I mean, Arizona, again... Oof. Right? But can they hold that Colorado that firepower down? Vegas, Minnesota, again, you think of Minnesota, it's not the Minnesota defensive of days. They've been able to beat Vegas, I think, four times this season. So again, it's very compelling when you look at the other divisions and look at, if it was to stay the same, what matchups you want to see.
Well, and this is something we can get into a little more deeply tomorrow throughout the course of the show. We're in our final hour, and we want to continue to play on the sports bucket list theme, so we'll get into that. But when you look at the North Division, and hey, it would be a little different if you had a rooting interest for one of your teams in Vancouver or Calgary, but chances of that happening, pretty slim. And in one case, slim to none. What matchups do you want to see just as a hockey fan? Do you want to see Toronto-Montreal first round?
Yes.
Edmonton-Winnipeg?
Yes.
Is that what you want to see? We're going to get another potential playoff preview tonight. It could be Montreal-Winnipeg that get locked in if Montreal is able to overtake Edmonton and work its way in. I think Winnipeg's going to be either a 2 or 3 seed. I don't see Winnipeg backsliding all the way to 4, but you never know. Toronto's going to win this division. They've pushed their lead pretty comfortably atop this division. The other three teams, who knows? Games in hand for the Habs, all of those different things. And again, we can dive into that a little more deeply tomorrow, but you just said right away, Toronto, Montreal, sign me up for that round 1.
Sign me up. You've got, assuming that Carey Price is back, assuming that Brendan Gallagher is back for the playoffs, I want to see Carey Price and the possibility, Scotty, of him being that goaltender. Carey Price, the one that we saw against Pittsburgh last year, you know, the one that we've seen in the playoffs. Can he, you know, be the thorn in the side of the Toronto Maple Leafs that are obviously expecting to go a lot further than just the first round of the playoffs? Also, you know, you get Brendan Gallagher back. What can he do to get in the heads of some of those Toronto Maple Leafs forwards? What kind of you know, disturber can he be, shall we say, on
shift
the ice.
Disturber.
So I think, yeah, shift disturber. That's a good one. That's a good one. Shift disturber. I think it'd be pretty awesome to see that. And, you know, it's Toronto, Montreal. It's the lure of the original six, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I am all on board. Sign me up. Montreal, Toronto, first round.
So we did get a question earlier, and it bears playing out here because we mentioned where the Canucks are at. So far, no positive COVID cases today. That's good news. In the pursuit to get whichever bodies you can back on the ice next week, those that feel like they're recovered, those players who've been injured who might be rejoining the team, maybe some minor league players or guys who've been deployed to the AHL who are going to find their way up to the roster, whatever that ends up looking like. Patrick Johnson had a very good article last night saying, look, got communication from Bill Daly, and it's pretty consistent with what we've heard the whole time. Haven't had a need to reschedule and say fewer games as of yet. Reschedule, yes, but not fewer games. We haven't had to pair any of those back, and we anticipate right now that the Vancouver Canucks are going to get to 56 games, as will every other team. Now, when you start to do the math on that and say, okay, when might they be back? Insiders are saying around April 17th, which is not this weekend, but the coming weekend, and well, I guess they'd have to push things back. You're talking about 19 games in anywhere from 28 to 31 to 35 days. We're going to find out a lot about how much of a contingency the NHL built in as far as a buffer in the schedule goes, but a lot of people feel that it's a full week. So we'll see what the Canucks schedule looks like when it gets back up and running. And again, if no positive tests come in, now we're getting to a place where the NHL is going to start to announce something. Mm-hmm. Not today, maybe not tomorrow, but we're getting a lot closer to that. We had this text come in, Karen. Sorry, I just wanted to give that as the backdrop to Capitol Hill, Ron. What would happen if the Canucks ended up in the playoffs? Stranger things have happened. Imagining after a grueling schedule, after playing so many games in such a short period, how banged up and tired the team will be. Rather than play these games, maybe the league could give the Canucks the Luongo recapture fee back next year as compensation. I would love to see them play, but I don't think we'll be seeing some good hockey at the end of the schedule. The Luongo recapture thing, that's a pipe dream. I don't think there'd be anything coming back. Nope. He does mention the grueling schedule, and Vancouver is going to have to go through the ringer here. That's just one of the things that happens with everything we are all dealing with right now, and unfortunately for the Vancouver Canucks, this has hit them harder than any other team in the National Hockey League.
It's actually been the biggest breakout, Scott, since the pandemic hit, I think in any league, in any sport. Like, this has been the biggest that we've seen that players testing positive within some sort of team in some sport. I've been in two minds about this because of the fact that, like, why? Why make them finish a grueling schedule if they're out of it? But, you know, if they go on a run and all of a sudden they're a couple points out here and there towards the end, then those games do mean something. But I got a feel for these players because I know they signed up for this and I know they signed off on basically kind of anything happening this season. The players said, yeah, we know it's going to be a grind because of all the procedures that we have to go through, protocols. It's a condensed schedule already. But you know, you don't sign up for something like this either. You don't sign up for a pandemic rolling through your team and basically knocking players out. So I got a feel for the players in the fact that, okay, we've just had, you know, a 14-day break. We're not doing anything, though. We're not working out. We're not skating. We're dealing with health and safety concerns for us and our family and, you know, symptoms. And I feel for wrapping your head around coming back and trying to think, okay, I've just gone through this and now I have to play out a 19-game schedule in a month, basically. Like, that's just, I got a feel for the players in that aspect of it.
Well, sure, of course. And health and safety should be at the forefront. But do you actually believe that if any player isn't fully committed, that he will be asked to play? Sorry, get
no.
out there. So there's that. No. There's this as well, Karen. There is further roster flexibility this year than any other. And I'm not sitting here saying, too bad, those are the cards you were dealt. But this is the adaptability that everybody's had to have during this time. And for the Vancouver Canucks, maybe Travis Green doesn't get to dress his ideal roster for most of those 19 games. It's a hybrid roster. Certain guys are getting certain nights off. That's just going to have to be the way it is. And the answer to everything, we all know this, is money. Like, that's why they're out there. That's why they're playing during the course of a pandemic. Yes, we get entertainment out of it, but we all know why they're back out there, and the players have a very vested interest in that as well. If any player wants to opt out from this point forward, Karen, I believe that player will have that that option, and it may mean that you don't get paid. I don't know exactly what that looks like when something like this happens this close to the end of the season, but I don't think anyone will be forced out there to play.
No, and I don't think they will be either. I've used the word forced in the past, and I don't think the NHL would make them play if they don't want to. I just have to hope that when it comes to discussion with a PA and you're scheduling these games, you're thinking down the road and you're putting games that maybe don't have to be played down the road, for purposes of you're not making the playoffs. Like, I look at that four-game set against Ottawa, and I think that's a series that can be moved down the road, and maybe you have to play it, Scott, when the playoffs are going on because you need it for draft purposes. Maybe that's a scenario. We don't know. That could be. Playoffs go on, you're not in it. You play these final four games of the season because you have to play out the stretch.
Concurrently while the playoffs are going on. Yeah, that's a possibility. I don't think Sportsnet would like that very much. I'm guessing.
Probably not.
Simply because they don't want to take any of the audience away. They don't want to divert any of their audience regionally over to a game that they would prefer to have people watching nationally. And really, that's the only reason you're playing these out. We could talk about lottery odds and all of those different things. The reason you're playing these out is to fulfill sponsorship obligations.
Yep.
That's why you're doing it. And that is just the hard reality of this. And look, a lot of us are going through the hard reality of this. There's a lot of people out there that if they did not have to go to work right now financially, they wouldn't be going. Mm-hmm. And those players are going to have the opportunity to make that exact same choice.
Well, and you look at financial as well, and I just thought of this too, Scotty, is the fact that, like, for the players, and there could be player bonuses that they still have to hit, right? So for them, they may want to go out. They're not saying it's just for the money aspect of it, but there is that, they could have that in their contracts. And this is kind of where I was at with the whole health and safety. Brandon in Coquitlam texts in, when we speak of health first and foremost with COVID symptoms, they need to have the same mindset with the super condensed schedule and the potential serious hurt player down the road. And that was my point. It was like, okay, they're not going to bring these players back from COVID too soon. They're going to make sure they're healthy that way. But it's like, what about the health of the players down the road when it comes to, you're in game 18, 19, and 30 days? The risk of injury could be more severe.
With all the respect, that doesn't fall under the NHL's umbrella. That's up to the team.
It doesn't, nope.
That's up to the team. That's up to the trainers. That's up to the medical staff. That's up to the coach saying, hey, we're monitoring fatigue levels here. We talk about this with goaltenders all the time. Wow, can you play a goaltender in back-to-back games? No, it's not good. The numbers tell you this, and it's going to cause a guy to break down further. Well, if you're playing an extended stretch of 3 and 4 over a number of weeks, or we talked about the Montreal Canadiens, how they had the 4 and 6 over the last 5 weeks of the season prior to this outbreak hitting the Vancouver Canucks. Some of that comes on management of, like, from a coaching standpoint. That's roster management. Look, we're not going to put this guy back out there tonight. We're going to give him a scheduled night off. And that's just the way it's going to have to be.
And they do have the flexibility this season to do that with the taxi squad. So far for the Canucks, we haven't seen anybody being recalled from Utica, Scotty. Of course, Cole Lind is in Vancouver. They did recall Guillaume Brisebois from AHL Canadian loan franchise and the goaltender as well. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's in Vancouver as well, been recalled. So there is more flexibility, understand that, especially if the Canucks are out of the playoff race down the road, then you don't have to play, and Elias Pettersson, if he's back, back-to-back nights, or you don't have to play someone like a JT Miller in back-to-back nights. So I do understand that there's more roster flexibility. I just, it's something that just, it's crossed my mind that the health and safety of the players after COVID could be put at risk when they get back on the ice.
Well, and that's a discussion they're going to have in their own personal situations. You know how athletes are, Karen. Some of those players are going to come back and go, you know what? It wasn't as bad as everybody said. I got through it. They may find out that they don't have the wind, that they don't have the legs, and they're going to have to be honest with themselves and honest in their evaluation when they have those conversations. There will be others who have some pressure at home. Look, we've seen these conversations when it comes to head injuries where players, no, I'm good, I'm going to try to get back, and it's those closest to them that say, I need you to think about your long-term health here. Like, what's been one of the longest conversations in Vancouver over the last 2 years? Michael Ferland. And people in Calgary know this situation very well, a player who is beloved in that organization. And when Michael Ferland's healthy, who wouldn't want Michael Ferland on their team? But it's become a lot more about Michael Ferland having a decent quality of life for the rest of his time on this planet and less about whether or not Michael Ferland can get into an NHL uniform at some point in time.
Yeah, we've heard from the conversations that he's had to have with his wife, and we know that it's more about right now for him playing with his kids. You know, as long as he can do that, you know, so you have to hope that just you look at someone like a Travis Hamonic, and Calgary Flames know this very well. I mean, decided not to play in the bubble last year, and that was because of family reasons and because of the fact that his children have had health issues and didn't want to be bringing COVID back and possibly exposing them to it and exposing himself to it. And so I could see someone like that, maybe I have no inside information, I don't know, but I could see someone like that having a very serious conversation about should I go back out and play this year. You got a Brandon Sutter. Like, a Brandon Sutter would have been probably a very high commodity for a lot of teams at the trade deadline if it hadn't been a COVID year. Right? And even in a COVID year, you know, maybe that he's gotten some, Jim Benning's gotten some conversations. But again, are you going to ask a player to waive his no move clause that he does have in his contract? Limited. Because his family, look what his family's going through right now. I mean, they're going through COVID, the entire family. Like, that is a serious conversation that he's going to have with his family if that was to be something that was proposed to him. So it's just a... I know it's the world we live in, Scotty, and I can't believe this is some of the conversations that we do have, but to quote someone very famous, unfortunately, it is what it is.
It absolutely is. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. Thanks for joining us here today. I did want to dive back into a few more of these bucket list items. We've been doing this over the course of the last 3 hours and change, and boy, the texts just keep coming in. The Masters is out there. Dave Dickinson said it's one for him. Colby Armstrong threw that out there as well. We haven't had a lot of people say the Masters is on their bucket list as far as our listeners go, but I want to get into a few more of our texts before we turn things over to notes and quotes in the final segment. Daryl Sutter, as I've called him before, the unintentional comedian, and he's doing it again today. He's having some fun with his new line combinations and his expectations. That audio is still to come this hour. Here are some that people have thrown out there. Somebody told me I've got to go to a UW-Oregon football game. I know how great that rivalry is. I disagree with Aaron, because I think this does change year to year. Aaron says neither of those fan bases care about their in-state rivals. I disagree. There are plenty of years where UW cares about Washington State because either both teams aren't in the national picture or both teams are having great years in the Pac-12. Those games mean something in the Apple Cup, and I've seen great civil wars before between Oregon State and Oregon. But yes, Washington and Oregon would be a fantastic game to go to. I agree with that, UW and Oregon.
This one comes from Joel in Red Deer, and I saw another text come in. So we've talked about the World Hockey Championship, Scott, but the Spangler Cup. And I've always actually thought about the Spangler Cup. One, you're going to Switzerland. You're going to Davos. Like, that's pretty cool in and itself. You get to go to a European city like that. I mean, Switzerland's a little more on the expensive side of European cities, but it's pretty impressive. And you know you're going to see some pretty fun hockey. And again, it's about the experience. Like, you watch some of those Canada versus Davos or whatever Swedish team is in it. Half the time, I don't even know who's playing in this tournament. But it's the environment, the atmosphere. The fans just seem like it would be such a fun place to go watch a hockey game. And again, I think relatively cheap in terms of actually getting a ticket to it.
I'm still putting the World Hockey Championships over the Spangler Cup.
Okay.
Very cool atmosphere, as you described. I'm not turning it down if someone offers me that opportunity, but if I have my choice, if I can go to Europe in the spring, Karen,
yeah,
in May, compared to, hey, winter in Switzerland, that sounds cool. I like to ski. So, yes, that could be very fun. But you give me the opportunity to go in May. You give me a national team to root for as opposed to, yes, I know Canada cobbles together a contingent, but it's also kind of weird when you see former NHLers on their club teams playing against Canada. It's kind of strange in that regard. I'm going World Hockey Championship over Spangler Cup, but I do think they are underrated events that most people bypass when they put together lists like this.
So you and I are big tennis fans, and we've talked about kind of our bucket list tennis tournaments. So this comes in, went to New York with a buddy to see a mate who moved there from Victoria. We encountered someone at a Giants home opener who had tennis tickets for the next night but couldn't go. We paid $150 per ticket without knowing what it was aside from the U.S. Open. Turned out it was the men's final, Federer versus Del Potro. That five-set marathon match, it's Del Potro's only Grand Slam. He came back and he beat Roger Federer in the final. I remember watching that, Scotty, and remember how epic that match was. So it's not a he's already been to his bucket list, getting to see Federer versus Del Potro. That was I'm super jealous on that one.
Okay, so you're a massive Federer fan. I count myself a Federer fan, but probably not as rabid as you, because I like to go nationalism more than you. Like, Federer, I would say, is one of my all-time favorite tennis players. I won't say he stands alone. Different for you. Would you go knowing Federer loses? Like, would you still take that? Like, Grand Slam final and Federer loses it, does it take something away for you? Or no, I got to see the guy that I consider the greatest of all time in a final, and I was there.
I think it would be being there and seeing it. It wouldn't matter if he lost, generally speaking, because even if he loses.
Oh, it matters. It just might not matter as much, Karen. It matters if you're cheering for someone.
It does, yes. I would probably be a little heartbroken to see him lose. But I will say this. If you look back at any of the Grand Slam finals that he's lost, you look back at Nadal finals in Wimbledon, any of, you know, some U.S. Opens, whatever the case is, they generally tend to be pretty epic tournaments and epic games. So, or matches, I should say, when it comes to tennis. So I'm not exactly, I wouldn't be as heartbroken, because I'd probably see a pretty impressive tennis match.
BP and Mission says, I've been to Switzerland. Theiss, Lucerne, and Zermatt. Agree, Karen. It's been a bucket list for a Christmas family trip, and it's amazing country. So BP and Mission backing you up on the Spengler Cup nod there. Keep those coming in. We'll see if we can get some in during the final segment. But we got some audio to get to. We got some numbers to get to as well. And they both involve Albertan teams. That is next. Notes and quotes coming your way on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
Only 12 players in the red so far. That's it. A couple of them in the clubhouse at 3 under. Brian Harman, Hideki Matsuyama. Those are your co-leaders right now. Partway through round one, a bunch of swingers still out there on the course. Corey Connors, he got things done from a Canadian perspective. He wasn't able to keep it in the red, but he's not too far out. Like, he's hanging around. This is a guy who finished tied 10th back in November, Karen, and Corey Connors. Mm-hmm. I think we can say that's an okay opening round for him.
Yeah, absolutely. At one point, he was under par. Didn't have exactly a great back nine, but you know what? Staying in contention, considering I think probably these clubhouse minus three, maybe a minus four if someone can get there. It's pretty decent. Dustin Johnson, even par. Phil Mickelson's even through seven. Good old lefty out there. I'm pretty sure he has his sunglasses on today. Jordan Spieth, even through five. But I got to give a shout-out, Scott, to my main man. And he's not really my main man, but this is impressive.
I thought Jordan Spieth was your main man.
He is my... What's he doing so far?
He's even.
Oh, even, you know.
He's fine. He's even through five.
I'll be watching him after this, after our show's over. But Bernhard Langer. Man, oh man. This guy is 63 years old, and he shot a 2-over for his round. You know who also shot a 2-over for his round? Oh, yeah, Brooks Koepka, Bubba Watson. Just guys that are probably like half his age. So I got to give a shout-out to Bernhard Langer, a +2 in these conditions, 63 years age. The man works out, Scott. He keeps his body in peak physical condition, can still hit the golf ball around Augusta. Good on him.
Yeah, good on him. There's one every year, not always at the Masters, but there's one every year, a guy who's long past his prime but has a good opening round or makes the cut and is just a feel-good story. And you think, oh, the guy's not going to win, not going to go Tom Watson and nearly win the Open like he did just a few years ago and incite a massive fight about poker in the Lower Mainland. But, you know, there's somebody like that every once in a while. Somebody mentioned poker in the text message inbox, by the way.
Is that what started it? Was conversation about goodness. I didn't know that part.
You didn't know the backstory of that? No. Long feud many years ago. A couple of radio hosts in Vancouver went at it pretty good about whether poker was a sport, but the backdrop was Tom Watson nearly pulling something off at the Open Championship. Dex texted in this morning, and we'll filter a few more of these in, but we're going to get to notes and quotes in just a second as we look ahead to the on-ice action, not only tonight, but in coming days. I would love to see many sporting events, but I also love poker, says Dex. I know it's not a sporting event. Now, to some it is, Dex, as I just alluded to. But the World Series of Poker would be awesome to go to in Vegas, mainly for the fact that I can actually participate which makes it even more appealing.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that you could maybe be in it one day. I'm probably not going to go playing to see poker, you know, watch poker. I don't watch it on TV, but I think the spectacle of being in Vegas for that would be impressive. This one's interesting. It's from Jay in Maple Ridge, Scott. Not a sporting event, but getting in a cage with great white sharks is on the bucket list for sure. You know what, Jay? You do you. I'm going to let you do that one because that sure as heck is not on my bucket list.
Not on mine anymore. I think that while I won't say I won't do it, Karen, and I'm not going to say it was on my bucket list, I can tell you this, being a father now, there are a bunch of things that you felt about one way prior to having kids and you feel about much differently after having kids. Going, well, I can't really go do that now. It's a little too risky for me now. Back when it was just me I had to worry about, who cares? That's fine. Maybe not the way you should look at it, but that's kind of the way it goes.
Yeah, you aren't going to get me in a cage with sharks, that's for sure. That's not going to happen. I'm not even going to anywhere near a shark. I don't care if it's one that they say, you know, it's in an aquarium and you're going swimming with them and they're like, no, these ones are tame. Nope, not going to do it. Not even close.
Very quick spin off of that poker text that came in from Dex where, hey, I can participate, so that makes it more appealing to me. If you had a choice between the ability to play Augusta National or have a pass to go to the Masters, which are you taking?
Well, because I'm terrible at golf, I want a pass to go watch it. Like, that's, to me, I am so bad that there'd be no joy in it because I wouldn't be able to even shoot my way around the golf course. So for me, it's specifically we go watching it.
Well, you wouldn't have to play off the tips, but if you had the opportunity, so would you not play Augusta if you had the chance? Would you say, no, the course is too good, I'm not playing it? Or if you just had the chance to play it, would you say, man, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience, I'm doing it?
Do I have the ability to give it to somebody then that would appreciate it a lot more than I would?
Nope. You have a chance to play.
Shoot.
15 years later, you're looking back and you're either telling a story about how you said, no thanks, I don't think I'm going to play Augusta National, or I don't care that I shot 186, I got to play Augusta National.
Scotty, you've never seen me hit a golf ball. It's hard because looking back, and if I... You know, I don't want to regret it. So if it's just to have the chance or not, I guess I'd have to take the chance and just embarrass myself around the golf course. That's a hard one. Oh, my goodness. I'm so bad, Scotty, that nobody wants to see me destroy that golf course.
You would take the opportunity. I know you would. You're a gamer.
I would.
You would take the opportunity.
But again, if it's going to be versus gaming or watching, I'd watch. If it would be versus playing or not playing, I guess I'd have to play. Oh, my goodness.
A very busy NHL slate tonight. The Canucks and Flames were supposed to play tonight. We know that's not going to happen. Flames not in action again until Saturday against the Oilers, who will be out there. And mercifully for the Ottawa Senators, it is the final time they will see Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. We're going to get to some other audio here in just a second. We'll get to Dave Tippett, who's updating the Oilers' schedule and the postpones Canucks games as well. What Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl have done to that team this year is criminal. It feels criminal. It really does. Draisaitl has 21 points in 8 games. McDavid has 20 points in 8 games against the Ottawa Senators. And just to put that in perspective, if you just take Leon Draisaitl's 8 games against the Sens, he would be second on the Detroit Red Wings in scoring this season. Philip Ronick leads that team with 22 points. Draisaitl would be 1 point back just using the games against the Senators.
Yeah, they feasted on Ottawa this season. And I have to say, Ottawa didn't actually play that poor of a game yesterday against them. I mean, other than McDavid and Draisaitl, the rest of that Oilers team did not do a whole heck of a lot out there. I actually saw on Twitter the bottom nine were called Roombas out there with helmets, so they're just basically roaming around and not doing anything, vacuuming up, shall we say, time on the ice. But I don't know what it is, because the Montreal Canadiens have those two figured out and the Ottawa Senators can't figure it. It's the exact opposite against those two teams.
All right, so
I don't know.
Well, man, those two guys, like those two guys, it's almost like they're in their heads, and I know that it's a lot of skill. It's a lot more like that goal Draisaitl scored yesterday where he is below the goal line when he takes the shot. It's one of those impossible angle shots. Like, that's one of those cheat codes. Like, that yeah. just doesn't seem quite fair, does it?
No, and it's funny because I remember back a few seasons ago, Jake Virtanen for the Vancouver Canucks had a similar goal scored against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And it's like, those are the goals that, like, I'm not comparing the two. But
slightly different players. Slightly different players, yeah.
I was going to use the analogy, those are goals you score when you're good, but, you know, Canucks fans might have a little bit to say about that. But those are the ones where you have to be lucky to be good.
There hasn't been a whole lot of luck in Calgary this year, and not surprisingly, they're not very good. They've got 16 games to go, the first of which happened Saturday night against those aforementioned Edmonton Oilers. They're going to switch up the lines. They did it yesterday. Daryl Sutter's talking about it again today. They need to jumpstart the offense. I don't know how much they're going to get out of it, but guess what? Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau are on the same line. They split up Johnny and Monty. Here's Daryl Sutter on his expectations for Gaudreau and Tkachuk playing together.
Well, they've played together in the power play since Christ was a child, so they should be able to do it 5-on-5.
Yeah, no problem. Oof. Yeah, no problem. Since Christ was a child, Daryl Sutter bringing that one in.
Oh, they've gotten the fountain of youth, if that's the case. Man, oh, man. I got to say, I love me some Daryl Sutter because he is a quote machine and he gives you that. And you know what? I guess what he's saying is, his expectation, they're going to go out there and score goals. That's basically what they're going to do.
Maybe. You know, the power play hasn't been any screaming hell either.
Well, I think this is kind of one of those last-ditch efforts that he's trying to make, Scott, trying to figure out how to maybe get the offense going.
I said it earlier this week, and I will say it again, and this is where this next question comes to for Daryl Sutter. It has felt for quite some time now that it's less about making this playoff push and winning hockey games. I'm not suggesting for a second they're not trying to do that. I think Daryl Sutter would like that. But it has felt for a while like this is more about, okay, who's sticking around to be part of Team Daryl next season? That question was basically posed to Sutter today, or at least that's where his answer came from.
Is one of your goals this season, both in the last 5 weeks and in the next 5 weeks, to kind of set a standard as far as what's acceptable for you moving forward, not only this season, but into next?
100%. It's reestablishing that making sure the players know what the benchmark is and what the expectations are for them as individuals and as a group.
But it's not just that. It's not just that. Yeah, okay, here's your individual expectation. Part of this is, look, Brad Treliving, when we have our conversation at the end of the year and we talk about what this roster is going to look like next season, you saw it the same way I saw it. That's why player X, player Y, player Z, I don't know how long that goes, Karen, how long that list is. That's why they shouldn't be a part of that next year in Calgary. And why players A, B, C, D, and E, that's why they are going to be a part of this operation.
I mean, if you look at the 2-9 record right now, if he was to go to Brad Treliving, 2-9 since they won 3 in a row when Daryl Sutter took over, I think there might be a longer list of player X versus check marks beside at the moment. But I do think he's trying to figure out any way to just see which players can maybe, even if it's not this season, but can figure out his system and maybe start to thrive in it towards the end of the year.
Brad Treliving was asked point blank yesterday in an interview, are there any untouchables on this roster? He did not say yes.
Well, I mean, do you blame him? The expectations for this team this season coming in were playoffs and to compete for a high playoff spot. That's what they were. And that's, I think they're internal. I think that's what the fan base thought. I think that's what the media thought. I don't think I'm wrong in any of that. So I don't think there should be any untouchables. I would say probably Matthew Tkachuk. If you're going to put one up there, but maybe not. Maybe I don't. I mean,
well, the list is longer than that. And I agree with you that he is a Daryl Sutter guy. And Sutter has gone out of his way at press conferences to protect Tkachuk and say, well, this is on me. I got to get him more ice time. All of these different things. Tkachuk's going to be there unless somebody blows them away in a deal or there is such an upgrade at one particular position. And the only way to get that deal done is him. I think that's why Brad Treliving answered the way he did, Karen. But yeah, Tkachuk is likely back. Jacob Markstrom's coming back.
There are
guys on that blue line like Tanev that you mentioned. And is Hanifin untouchable? No, he's not untouchable, but I imagine they really like that pairing. And Rasmus Anderson's a guy that they're going to want back in Calgary next year. Like, the list is longer. And there are certain guys, like Sam Bennett came out this week and said, I'm actually pretty happy now, all of a sudden. I'm pretty happy being here. I feel like I'm contributing. I like my role on this team. Sutter's gone to great lengths to compliment guys in the bottom six. It's more about the difference makers or the players who are supposed to be difference makers and what happens with them.
And that says a lot, doesn't it? If your head coach is complimenting your bottom six and not your top six players, I think that says exactly a lot about where the Calgary Flames are at this point in the season.
We're all trying to figure out when the Canucks are going to play, what the schedule looks like when they do, how these teams across Canada factor in, because they're wondering when they make those games up as well. So we're going to hear from the two head coaches in Alberta right now. Here's Daryl Sutter, third and final clip from him. They were supposed to play the Canucks tonight. Daryl, as uncertain as the rest of us as to when those games get made up.
Well, we don't know where the Vancouver games are going to fit in yet. If that's what you're asking, they're going to have to slide them in. If you look at our schedule now, the Edmonton game that we're playing Saturday would have been Vancouver. So I'm assuming that Edmonton game that was on our schedule in early May will become Vancouver. But we also have to get three more games in at some point. So is it a concern? Not really. The league's handled it really well. And our team is, touch wood, has been very thorough and very – very fortunate to with everything that's going on. But, my biggest, it's an overriding concern. It's not just about the team. My biggest concern is, when they talk about the Canucks and that, my biggest concern, these are young guys, right, with young families. And that, to me, is the biggest concern, that we are not getting the vaccines necessary as a society here to curb this. And so hopefully, I know everybody talks about social distancing and masks, but the big problem is we're not getting the vaccines and we need that.
And yet until we get them, social distancing and masks, pretty big part of the equation. And listen, everybody who hears that clip is going to agree, yes, more vaccines, get them sooner. Let's get them through this population. Until then, we have to be vigilant. We have to be more stringent than Canadian society has been in recent months.
Well, and, obviously, Daryl Sutter, you can hear a bit of emotion in there, too, to his voice, because, he's got a personal connection to what's going on in Vancouver. Obviously, his nephew is Brandon Sutter. So it's, you can social distance the best you can. You can wear masks. You wash your hands. You have to be vigilant. And we do know, Scott, though, that you can do all those things and you can still get the virus. So with what is happening up here in Canada and the fact that, we're not going to be fully vaccinated as a country, first dose at least, until, the start of the summer. It's just the case. So when it comes to, I don't even know what to say anymore, because it's just, you just have to keep doing what you're doing or do better at what you're doing. But can you even do better? You just have to just stay vigilant and just try to do your best for the next couple months and try and get through it.
Daryl Sutter, not sure how those games slot in against the Canucks. Dave Tippett, he's playing update schedule on the fly as well. They have the Senators for the last time today. Then it's Calgary on Saturday. Here's the head coach of the Oilers referencing those postponed Canucks games and what possibly happens.
Could you enlighten us a little bit more about the situation involving the soon-to-be-postponed two games against Vancouver next week? Do you believe there's a possibility that you might be playing somebody else in those spots?
As far as I haven't heard that, Terry. And as far as I know, after the Calgary game on Saturday, we're going to have a few days off. The next scheduled game right now is next Saturday, and I haven't heard anything in between that. So I would suspect that we're going to have some time to sit back, I think.
Maybe. We'll see. Now, Vancouver's not going to be back on the schedule till we think at the earliest around April 17th. That doesn't mean they can't bump other games up.
Yeah, we've seen it already. Yesterday's game against Ottawa, Edmonton, that the start time was moved up, but also I believe today's game was supposed to be tomorrow, and it's been moved to today. And then they've also moved, again, the Calgary-Edmonton game for this Saturday. So the NHL is probably working on this. I'm guessing, Scotty, they were waiting to see when the first negative day of testing for the Vancouver Canucks was. That was today. So now I think they probably can put a bit more of a plan in place when it comes to rescheduling these games. I'd be actually pretty shocked if Edmonton had a full week off. I would be shocked because of all the games that they have to get in.
Yep, as would I. That was what was supposed to happen for Calgary this week, and while they've had off longer than they expected, at least they were able to put this Edmonton game in there in its place and at least get the Flames back up and playing on Saturday. Last but certainly not least, all-Canadian matchup. The other one tonight has the Jets and the Habs going at it in Montreal. Canadiens losers 3-2 yesterday to the Toronto Maple Leafs in what is potentially a first-round playoff preview. And guess what? This is also potentially a first-round playoff preview. We kind of know the four teams that are going to be in the mix. We just don't know where those last three are going to slot in and which team gets the other in that opening round. Paul Maurice, head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Pierre-Luc Dubois, the big acquisition this season. Here's the head coach's answer as to whether or not PLD has met his expectations.
So he's met them for sure. This is not a point issue for us. I mean, he scored a bunch. He had a tough start coming to us with the quarantine and his injury. I think what surprised me the most is the other things that I think he can grow into. So he's a skill player. He can make plays. He can score goals. He'll produce points. But he does have an innate defensive mindset. So he is good in his own end. He's physical in his own end. He doesn't cheat the game for offense. And that's a really important characteristic for a guy that you see eventually will play against the other team's, you know, best offensive player. He'll be able to defend them and also produce points. So he's at least as good as I thought he was. And then after you spend time, you start to say, this guy's going to grow into be a dominant forward in the NHL. I don't know that he's going to score 50 goals. I don't care whether he does or not, but I think he's going to shut down the other team's best. I think he'll outscore the other team's best on the nights we play him against.
And Paul Maurice doesn't need him to be a 50-goal scorer. They've got other guys on that team that can light the lamp as well. I think what he does give them, Scotty, before Blake Wheeler got hurt, he gave them that line with Paul Stastny on the wing, Pierre-Luc Dubois and Blake Wheeler. I mean, that's a pretty talented line that you can still throw out against the other team's top opposition, and they're going to still probably play a lot of time in their own offensive zone.
8 goals, 8 assists. He's got 16 points in 24 games. That doesn't jump off the page. All they're looking for, quite frankly, mm-hmm. in the here and now, can he look like the same guy he did in that Leafs series last year when he was playing for Columbus? That guy shows up in the playoffs. The regular season doesn't matter at all for PLD. And this is a team that thinks it can do something. I'm interested to see what Kevin Cheveldayoff does in the next couple of days leading up to the trade deadline. Can he go get a little bit of help on that back end? They've got the goaltending. Arguably the deepest forward group in the National Hockey mm-hmm. League. It's in that conversation anyway. You might like one better than another, but it's in that conversation. He can be a big part of it in the playoffs. It's not just that he can score, Karen. It's just not that he goes to those dirty areas. He's the type of player who can have a physical impact on a series as well and start laying bodies out.
That's why I really liked Winnipeg and their forward depth. That will be tested a little bit. Obviously, Blake Wheeler's not going on this road trip with them, possibly concussion symptoms. But that's why I've loved this Winnipeg Jets team. I think that they have the forward group to grind down another forward group when it comes to a 7-game series. I've always liked them. I love that third line of Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. Even that fourth line with Matthew Perreault, who can, as a fourth liner, still figures out how to put the puck in the net. So I do like them, but their depth will be tested a little bit, especially tonight against Montreal when we have no Blake Wheeler in the lineup.
All right, keep those submissions coming in every single show. Man, we had a boatload today. We tried to get as many in as we could. We were overwhelmed to a certain degree at 960, 960, or 650, 650. You want to get one more thing in, Karen?
Yeah, this is from Nick. No-brainer, hands down, play around at Augusta.
Yes.
Okay, I will. I feel sorry for the groundskeepers after the fact to see how many divots. Because I'm going to have a lot more swings per hole. There's going to be a lot of divots there on the course.
That's the great thing about golf. The worse you are, the more you get to play compared to the other people. Like the really good people barely get to play golf.
So I'll really get to enjoy Augusta.
This is what I'm saying.
Get to enjoy it.
Grab your mint juleps from the Kentucky Derby. Bring those on the course with you. You can have it all going on.
I may have to have a few bevies to get through that one.
Well, that's most days. Karen Sermon, Scott Rintoul for all of us right now with what we're going through. Hey, stay safe, stay healthy out there. We're back tomorrow. We're going to turn you over to the big show in Calgary, dig into some of those Daryl Sutter comments further, I imagine. In Vancouver, it's Bic and the Boss on Sportsnet 650. We're back for one final show tomorrow. Brendan Morrison, you didn't hear him today. He will be with us tomorrow. Chris Cuthbert as well. Should be a fantastic Friday. Enjoy your Thursday, and we will talk again in the morning.